wake up everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way.
Oh, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, you had better wake them up. Get them going on this Wednesday on B&E. You're going to grab an umbrella as you're up and out. Going to rain throughout the morning commute, it appears, as a cold front is making its way through central Texas as we speak. Dropping temperatures into the 70s today. Should be beautiful once the storm moves through. Should clear out by about 8:30, 9 o'clock this morning. Should be a lovely Wednesday, but you're going to deal with the wet stuff throughout the morning commute as the line of storm moves from west to east and cools things down considerably. Fall-like temperatures are coming, and that is a good thing. The Fall Classic is underway, and the Astros are in a 1-0 hole in the World Series. Not a good debut or start last night for Houston in Game 1. We'll talk baseball in the Fall Classic. Also, some football out there. Longhorns prepping for the trip to Waco. And a big weekend of college football on tap as we get you up over the hump and look forward to that weekend. Also, pro football, Roger Goodell finally weighing in on the Deshaun Watson situation. Apparently a trade in place, potentially, to move Deshaun Watson to the Miami Dolphins. We'll get into that conversation as well. It's going to be a busy, busy Wednesday. Glad you are with us. However you are finding us, early bird always gets the worm on 104.9, 101.9 FM, AM 1260. We are always streaming live and local and digital on your Horn app, on your smart speaker, and at hornfm.com, Mr. Gottmoltz.
Good morning to the soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, the soldiers in the state of Texas, and all those that fight for us each and every day. Thank you so much for what you do. It is appreciated. We do appreciate it each and every day. And for those out there, please be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem out there. It's going to be a little wet this morning, slippery. So if you got to get going, get going.
Yeah, I drove in this morning, left the house about 4:43, and it was about 80 degrees, felt like. And then by the time I got to the office, just before 5 o'clock, it was...
Went out there hustling
62,
now.
61. Yeah, I drove right through the oncoming cold front. Temperatures dropped 20 degrees, it felt 15 at least, as I drove in and then hit the rain and began right here on 360 as I crossed Mopac there. Coming west, and it's going to be moving, as we said, from west to east and dropping temperatures. And something, as I got out of the car, I got soaked, and then I didn't have an umbrella. And then the wind was howling.
Yep.
Dusted up the ragweed, so my allergies kicked in pretty bad as I walked into the studio this morning.
Take your allergy medicine this morning, folks, before you get out.
Yeah,
that wind is blowing.
The wind's howling and blowing that stuff through, so it's kicking it up for sure as you get up and out this morning on this Wednesday. We'll get to all the top stories of the morning. It's going to be a good one. And as I say, if you are looking for outdoor activity along about 9 o'clock, it's going to be beautiful here in central Texas and throughout the listening area. And that's going to be the case the rest of the week with temperatures in the low 70s, Buck, mm-hmm. with lower humidity, the blue skies, and fall-like conditions as we push on here in the final week of October. And what did you tell us earlier in the week? To plant your lettuce.
Yeah, it's almost time.
Put the lettuce in the ground.
Yeah, I'll start. I'll wait.
Farmers out there.
You got to be careful if you get those warm days, though. That lettuce gets a little... soggy. It's the nights that the wet nights and the cool nights are what the lettuce loves. So we're going to have some of those coming up.
Warmest temperature I see in the next 10 days is 82.
Yeah.
Bunch of 70s, bunch of 60s.
Can survive, especially the 50s.
We'll
take
that.
50s that night. That'll be great.
All right. Well, enjoy that, but that's going to be a bit of a mess this morning.
I got a couple of trees I'd like to be planting here over the next couple of days.
Might be a good idea, too.
Yes.
Good idea, too. All right, let's start the show and the hour with the headlines, trending topics, things you need to be aware of as you're up and out. That's how we start each hour here on B&E. UBO Business Services brings it to you. We'll start with the World Series, and not good as far as the start goes. If you're a Houston Astros fan, Atlanta Braves jumped on Astros starter Framber Valdez last night early and often. Rode that hot start to a 6-2 win in Game 1 of the World Series at Minute Maid Park. Braves leadoff man Jorge Soler belted the third pitch of the game into the Crawford boxes for a solo home run. First time it's ever happened in the World Series history. The first batter of the series hits a home run. Atlanta added another run in the second, two more in the third. Adam Duvall hit a two-run shot as well. Valdez struggled with command all night, allowed 5 runs and 8 hits in just 2 innings. Game 2 tonight, Houston will hand the ball to right-hander Jose Urquidy. Atlanta will counter with lefty Max Fried. Wasn't all good news for the Braves. Their Game 1 starter Charlie Morton He's going to miss the remainder of the series. He suffered a fractured right fibula, broke his leg, cracked his leg when he was struck in the shin with a comebacker off the bat of Yuli Gurriel in the third inning. He will be out for the remainder of the series. Did get three more outs before leaving with that leg injury. Threw 10 more pitches. College football Longhorns continue to prep for their trip to Waco Saturday to face 16th-ranked Baylor. Dave Aranda, 6-1 Bears, built on a stout defense in the Big 12's leading rushing attack under first-year offense coordinator Jeff Grimes. His wide zone offense rushing attack ranks 9th nationally in yards per game at nearly 240. Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian knows his Longhorns are going to have to be gap sound and disciplined on defense.
When we do some things that are a little more elaborate, when you look at the tape, even later in game, we execute them pretty well. And I probably didn't give our players enough credit to do that. And so I think that we'll stay in that kind of frame of mind because you trust the players in our preparation. And that is something that I give them credit in their preparation to do it. We see it in the first half, the way we play. We see it coming out of the locker room. And I just think we need to kind of stay down that course and line of thinking into the fourth quarter, even after if we have a couple tough series that don't go our way.
Longhorns and Baylor, 11 a.m. on Saturday, 7 a.m. on the pregame right here on the Horn. NBA last night, busy night. All three Texas teams in action, including two squaring off. Dallas Mavericks took down the Houston Rockets in their home opener, 116-106. Luka led the way with 26 points, 14 boards. Jason Kidd victorious in his head coaching home debut for Dallas last night. And a good one in San Antonio last night. Went to overtime. Spurs, though, come up short. L.A. Lakers beat San Antonio 125-121. Anthony Davis, 35.17 boards. Russell Westbrook, 33, as L.A. rallied without LeBron James, who was out with a sore right ankle. DeJounte Murray posted a triple-double in the loss.
This segment brought to you by UBO Business Services. Great people, great service, endless possibilities. That's UBO Business Services. Visit them at ubeo.com.
The Braves come out swinging, looking for that sinker, catching it when it hits the strike zone last night.
Well, it wasn't sinking. Framber Valdez, key for him is just strike one. He's got to pitch ahead in the count, and then he can make people chase and get that sinker running away. And, boy, the first two pitches were balls, so now it's 2-0.
And it had to come down to guts.
And he threw it right down the middle. I mean, it was and that was really the story of the night for Framber Valdez. I mean, it was good hitting for the Braves, give them credit, but he was throwing right down the pipe on some of these pitches. And
they were looking to him.
And then they were jumping on him for sure. Well, against, quality ball club and as hot as the Braves are, if you're going to pitch behind in the count and have to come in and then you don't make a good pitch even behind in the count, you can make a good pitch behind in the count.
Yeah, 0-2s are terrible.
But he was not right last night for sure.
And they hit up and down the lineup too.
They did. And, eight hits in two innings. I mean, you give up more hits than outs for your starting pitcher. Once they handed it off to the bullpen, things calmed down, and the Astros actually pitched pretty well the rest of the way. Only gave up the one extra run beyond that, but it was not a good start for Framber Valdez, who was one of the heroes of the ALCS. The game, he pitched against Boston at Fenway Park, got the Astros back in the series and helped them win that series. So we'll see. And remember, Framber had a rough go, a quick outing in game one of that series against Boston. Astros ended up winning that game, coming back and winning it 5-4, but he did not pitch well. So, there's a hope that he can bounce back and give you a good start later on in the series because it is a long series. The Braves do lose Charlie Morton to the fractured fibula. Yuli Gurriel hits a grounder through the box and hits him in the leg. Looked pretty innocuous when it happened. He covered first base on that play.
Yeah.
Didn't show much effect of it, but obviously,
came back and still got three outs afterwards.
He did, and actually told his manager he could go back. He said it only hurts to run. I don't like, and we're in a national American League park, so I don't have to bat. He said it doesn't hurt to pitch; it hurts to run. So that's the tough guy, Charlie Morton, who was effective in his. And Astros actually loaded the bases.
I know
against
they had
Morton
their chances.
The
yes.
And if you know Charlie Morton, you got to get to him early. He usually struggles through that first inning and then settles in. Astro fans learned that as he was a stalwart for the Astros for quite a while. But the Astros could not get that big hit. Kyle Tucker grounded out with the bases loaded in the first inning. Astros had a chance to respond and respond to the two that the Braves scored in the first, but could not. And the Braves go on to win it 6-2. And as we said going in, the Astros now 2-8 lifetime at home in World Series games. Not sure what's going on at Minute Maid Park. Astros have not been good at home in the Fall Classic, and now they're in a 1-0 hole, or 0-1 hole, in the World Series. Game 2 will be tonight. Obviously pretty important for the Astros to try to even it to this evening. And I will say, the Astros, lineup has feasted on left-handed pitching
this year and even into the postseason. And Max Fried is the only lefty starter they're going to see from Atlanta. So a big opportunity for Houston tonight to get back in that series. But yeah, Valdez admitted afterwards the adrenaline was pumping. He was a little amped up, Valdez is the guy that Dusty Baker says could play middle linebacker. He'd play football if you wanted him to. He's a bulldog that way, big barrel-chested guy, and just did not couldn't.
I liked when he threw his curveball. He started to throw his curveball in the second inning when he went about the second time around.
Yeah.
He's got a nice curve that comes way across.
And that's the sweeping curve that you want to – when you get ahead in the count like that, then he can throw that and they'll chase it. Especially left-handed hitters will chase that ball away, and he just did not have good stuff last night. Just a little too jacked up, and maybe trying a little bit too hard, and the pressure of the World Series, his first, because he was not with the team in 2019 did not pitch in the World Series in 2019 when the Astros played the Nationals. So 0-1 hole for Houston. Braves get the jump, and boy, are they hot! It is fun, all these storylines, watching this with the Braves manager. His son is the Astros hitting coach, which is pretty cool. There's some subplots there. And, of course, Dusty Baker with his, connections to the Braves organization, having played with Hank Aaron way back, 45 years ago. Pretty cool to see this series. First matchup between these two since the late 90s in a postseason series when they were both in the National League. So series underway. Game two is tonight back in Houston. And by the way, tickets are expensive. I looked into some tickets. Man.
Woo. Over the top, aren't they?
Woo. Yeah. Bring your wallet. Bring your wallet if you want to get to one of those games down in Houston or certainly back in Atlanta where the World Series is underway. But college football, Longhorns prepping for Baylor. How are we feeling on a Wednesday? Longhorns, this is a matchup that doesn't seem to favor Texas. As far as the Texas team we've seen through seven games, they are stout on defense, and they run the football like crazy. They'll stick to the run. They've got two running backs, and they don't ask their quarterback to do a lot if they can get that ground game going, and that's going to be a challenge for Pete Kwiatkowski on defense. He knows what he's got. These guys have to find their gaps and be disciplined on defense against one of those offenses. Buck, you know what's coming.
Yeah, they're not going to give up on the run.
They're not going to trick you.
No. They don't have any tricky plays. They just have downhill runners. And they want to get into your secondary and see if you're willing to tackle into the secondary. But I think they'll come for four quarters with the run game. And I think Texas will have to do the same. I think they'll have to be patient. And Bijan's going to have to carry that ball 25 times. And he's going to take some hard hits because these guys will stick you. They come out of their secondary. They're hitters at linebacker and the secondary too. So they'll stick you. When you get your chances to get some one-on-ones in the secondary, you got to take the chance. And your quarterback has to be good throughout the game. He's got to be good from the first quarter straight through. They're going to need him to make some throws in the fourth quarter, I believe.
Yeah, that will be an ongoing – I mean, any level of football, your quarterback has to play well if you're going to win. But it does – Casey Thompson in particular
– Yeah, he can't be the one to lose the ball game.
No, you felt like you go back and watch the Oklahoma State game, the last loss. He threw that pick six before the half, and it felt like it kind of lost. He lost confidence. The Texas offense was moving so efficiently, and things were working really well.
Somebody's going to have to step up to make some catches in the middle.
They are. They're going to have to, have playmakers step in and step up. And this is, we just heard that from Steve Sarkisian in the headlines. We've got to trust our guys a little bit more in the fourth quarter. We've got to execute in the fourth. And as you heard Sark say, he'll go a little bit too conservative when things start going poorly, trying to get them into a play he knows they're good at, but maybe that leans towards being predictable.
Yeah, they know that too.
Yeah, and he that was some of the self-evaluation that Sark had with himself. That look, when we get to the fourth quarters, if we're struggling, I might need to be a little bit more exotic here and see if we can. Which I know the fans are frustrated with, but at the same time, Sark's mindset is, well, come on guys, let's just run something we're good at here. Let's do something we can execute and get some positivity, get a forward moving play.
It's hard to do those things if you're jumping the snap count and you got to put you behind the chains.
There's no question about that, and that's going to have to be the challenge. And Dave Aranda is going to have a well-schooled and disciplined defense. Terrell Bernard, the linebacker, is as good a linebacker as the Longhorns will see this year. This is a good unit for the soft-spoken Dave Aranda. I was watching some of his press conference yesterday. That guy, you got to really lean in to listen to Dave
Absolutely.
Aranda. He is a soft-spoken gentleman for sure, but his team is playing good football. They're one of the better stories in college football this year. The turnaround from year one to year two, with Jeff Grimes coming in to run the offense.
And their culture was built by Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
And they just kept on going, whether it's the weight room or whatever. That's that's the way they play.
Yeah, Aranda inherited a good culture, no doubt, yeah. that Rhule had left. But, yeah, and last year, you know, anybody that tried to take over a program during COVID with new coaches, new coaching staff, that was going to be, you know, that's Mike McCarthy up in Dallas, you know, even the professional level. You know, new staff coming in, the COVID restrictions, the Zoom meetings, and all the restrictions that were put on it. That was a challenge for coaches who had been in place. But
my expectations are
to come in and establish
that Sark will scheme up some things this week in the fourth quarter that are going to be a little bit different, and they're going to have to take some chances. They can't be conservative against this defense. If you run your same old plays and then say, well, these are the plays that have worked before, they're going to understand that too. And Dave Aranda's going to be sitting there waiting for your off-tackle runs and things like that.
Yeah, who replaces Jordan Whittington becomes a question for me as far as that go-to guy on a big third down, chain movers type players. That's going to be a big spot. The other side, Baylor, has two running backs, and one of them is the leading rusher in the conference. He is the senior from Abilene, Texas. What's this kid's name? That 784 yards rushing this year. Smith, the senior from Abilene, Abram Smith, and then Treston Ebner. These two guys have combined for over 1,200 yards rushing.
Yeah, and bring in the quarterback with that too, because he'll pull it down and run too.
Yes, Bohannon.
Yeah, Bohannon's apt to run more than Casey will.
He's a bigger kid too, and he can throw the long ball.
Yep.
So I mean, you kind of know what's coming here. They'll run it, and then play action and go up over the top. If your safeties are creeping up and trying to get after it. So Wednesday yeah. view, we'll talk Texas and Baylor, hear more from Sark throughout the morning. This says Astros got to get Altuve lit. Yeah, that's one of the things, if you're paying attention to the baseball and the Astros, Yordan Alvarez was just a monster in the final two games of the ALCS and carried the Astros here. But if you're watching, Altuve and Bregman are not hitting right now. And that's a problem because that's number one in your lineup, number three in your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Brantley's doing his thing, putting the ball in the gaps and getting on base. Yordan's been Yordan. Even Correa's had some big knocks. But right now, they got to get Altuve going. Altuve's having a rough postseason in the leadoff spot. And Bregman in the three-hole is really not, pushing that. That's the goal of that lineup is to go right-handed, left-handed with Brantley, then right-handed back with Bregman. Then it's Yordan from the left side, then Correa, and then Tucker. I mean, they go right, left, right, left, right, left, and really put pressure on a pitcher. And right now, the top guy and the third guy just not hitting well. They got to get that turn, or this won't be a very long series because you can already tell. You know, in that first inning situation with Charlie Morton, they really pitched around Yordan Alvarez. They didn't throw him anything to hit. Even with runners on base, they didn't mind loading the bases. They'd rather pitch to Correa in that spot with the right-on-right matchup. They've got to get Altuve and Bregman going. They survived the Red Sox because Yordan was just historically great.
Did Correa walk in the first inning?
No. He
hit out?
Let me think. Because Correa came up, they walked Yordan. He did walk. And then he walked after falling behind. He fell behind in the count,
right.
And then he walked, ended up having a good at-bat, and then they came with Tucker, and Tucker grounded out to end the inning. But you know, the outs were made by Altuve, Bregman, and then Tucker to end the frame. But, yes, I think the texture is right on. They've got to figure out what's going on with Altuve at the top of that order because he is such an igniter for them. This says, World Series home record for Houston due to the NL team getting a DH. Well, possibly. I mean, possibly. And we've talked about... I actually tweeted before the game that, you know, 1 and 2 are critical for Houston because when they go to Atlanta, you don't get to use the designated hitter, and that means Dusty Baker either needs to take Michael Brantley or Yordan Alvarez out of his lineup or put them both in the outfield in Atlanta, and somebody's got to play center field. So Dusty has then a decision to make because without the DH, because right now, you know, Brantley or Yordan are the DH and the other guy plays a corner outfield spot. They're going to have to figure that out. You'd like to keep both bats in the lineup, but that becomes a defensive liability. Yordan's not a great outfielder. Atlanta has a big outfield, so that decision needs to be made.
And they got players that can run.
Yes, and the question will come there, how much defense do you give up to keep the bat in the lineup, and which bat do you keep and which one don't you? And to the other texter's point, when the National League team gets a DH now, and that was the leadoff batter last night, Jorge Soler, who belted the third pitch, he saw him for a home run. So, yes, benefit Braves to have an extra stick in the lineup, no doubt. Is that part of the Astros' struggles? you know, it's a fair question. But the Astros now 2-8 at Minute Maid Park in home games in the World Series. Remember against Washington last time around, they didn't win a single home game. Lost the first two, won the next three in Washington, and then lost game 6 and 7 in Houston.
Well, they need to win tonight.
They don't need to go back there.
Because, as you said, that's a bigger ballpark, and that group can fly around.
Says Bregman has to get that struggle bat off his shoulder. He's doing nothing. Yeah, actually, in that first inning, Bregman watched a 3-1 pitch that was just, I mean, if, you know, Framber Valdez made some really bad pitches that the Braves jumped on. Charlie Morton made a really bad pitch with runners on to Bregman, and he looked at it. He didn't even offer on it. It was like 3-1, what are you looking at? I mean, that ball's right over the middle of the plate, kind of a hanging little.
Mm-hmm.
This is typically a ball Bregman jumps on, which tells you immediately he's not seeing the ball real well. He's not really confident right now, and that's unlike Alex Bregman. That was an opportunity for the Astros to get some runs on the board, and once they got him out, then they were able to pitch around Yordan to get to, and obviously Tucker ended that frame. But it was longer than that. Astros got to get the sticks going this evening. And Jose, surprising to see Jose Urquidy getting the ball in game two. You thought it was going to be the rookie Luis Garcia. I think they wanted to give him an extra day. He pitched so well in game six in the closeout game against the Red Sox. Get him on normal rest. He'll open the game three situation in Atlanta coming up. All right, we'll get into this NFL. Interesting, there is now a report. Our friend John McClain, who was on the show from the Houston Chronicle on Friday, he has a report today that a deal is done as far as compensation between the Texans and the Miami Dolphins involving Deshaun Watson. But Stephen Ross, not ready to pull the trigger. He's the owner of the Miami Dolphins. We'll get you details. Also, Roger Goodell weighed in on the Deshaun Watson situation yesterday.
Mike Tomlin didn't want anything to do with the USC job.
And Mike Tomlin made it clear he's not going to coach college football.
Yes.
We'll let you hear from Coach T. And you can thank Carson Palmer for that, because it was the former USC quarterback Carson Palmer who on a national radio interview put the name Mike Tomlin out there as far as a potential candidate for USC. So, of course, yesterday at his press conference in Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin was asked about a potential move to the college ranks, and he was pretty adamant of his intentions. So we'll let you hear that here coming up. Also, more on the Longhorns and the Bears. College football week is fast approaching. A good one on a Thursday night in pro football to start week 8. But a problem for the Green Bay Packers. They've got a COVID issue in Green Bay. How big will that be for their matchup with the Arizona Cardinals, the undefeated Arizona Cardinals on Thursday night? We'll get into all of those top stories this morning. Part of a busy Wednesday, getting you up over the hump. Be careful out there, slick streets, as the cold front moves through here on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Wednesday on the Horn, busy one, lot to do. A little later in the program, great guest lineup. We're going to talk to Howard Griffith of the Big Ten Network, help us preview the big college football weekend in that conference. Michigan, Michigan State, a couple of undefeated and top 10 teams will square off. Also, Ohio State, Penn State. And is James Franklin actually a candidate for the LSU job or the USC job? We'll talk with Howard coming up. Also, Chris Beard, head basketball coach at Texas. He normally will join us on Thursdays, but has a recruiting trip he's going to make tomorrow, so he's going to join us today at 8:25. We'll talk Texas basketball. Longhorns open up their college season coming up the first year under Chris Beard on November the 9th. That is fast approaching. We'll talk to Coach Beard about this new group. A lot of new players coming together, ranked in the top 5 in the country. So we'll talk to Coach Beard. Also a big week on the recruiting trail. We've got to ask Coach Beard. One of his assistant coaches jumped out of an airplane. To win the trust of a recruit. Now, he won't be able to talk about the recruit himself because he's not official yet, but we'll be able to talk about his top assistant jumping out of an airplane. My goodness.
Do what you have to do. Get her done.
If Ricky Williams had said to you, hey,
no.
Hey Buck,
no.
I will come to Texas if you skydive.
No.
Come on, man.
No.
Come on.
I already have a bad enough back. I'm not smashing into the earth for you,
Ricky. Well, this was
20
years ago or so.
I still had a bad enough back. No thanks. No, I would have said, no, that's not happening. Anything else you got in mind?
I mean, what else can I do?
What else? I'm in California. There ought to be something I could do.
Surf?
Yeah. Okay, I'll go.
Ride the wave?
Ride the wave with the sharks? Hell yeah, I'll do that.
Okay.
Not jumping out of anybody's plane. Okay. No.
No jumping out of a perfectly good airplane.
That's a Mike Tomlin definitely no.
Never say never, but never.
Never.
Mike Tomlin said yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not coaching in college again. Why would you do that? The Rooneys have given The Rooneys, they let that guy coach forever. That guy's not going to – that guy's going to even give you a hint that he's interested, even if he is.
So here's Mike Tomlin yesterday when asked. At the end of his weekly Tuesday media availability, somebody fired the question. I mentioned that it was Carson Palmer, the USC former USC quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, who it's kind of – I guess he's part of the USC search committee.
Yeah.
That's looking for the next coach. I mean, there's –
And Tomlin's name must have come up.
Well, yeah. Well, he mentioned it. He went on to the Dan Patrick show and was, you know, talking to Dan Patrick, and you know, said, you know, because Dan asked him about the search for the new coach at his alma mater, and he mentioned several names. He mentioned a lot of guys, and at the end of it, he said Mike Tomlin, which, of course, you know, that comes out of left field, and people are going, what the heck? Which, again, this was probably just USC compiling a list of names they'd like to talk to. So now it's been put out there on national discourse, and so Mike Tomlin gets asked about it yesterday, and he was not real thrilled.
Guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check. Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
Sorry, Coach. Sorry.
Yeah, don't get so angry about it. It's not a big deal. But, I mean, he knows that the Rooney family, this is exactly what the Rooneys expect him to say. Not a chance in hell.
But he is right. I mean, it's, you know, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is one of the premier positions in all of pro sports.
Right.
Not just pro football.
Yeah, he won two Super Bowls there. He's won 8 divisional championships. Yeah. I mean, that's what he should be saying.
And it is the Rooneys, right? I mean, it's just incredible. The Steelers, I'm 48 years old. I'll be 49 in December.
You've had two coaches,
They've had
right?
three head coaches in my
that's
lifetime.
It. Yes.
Three. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin. That's it.
And he's
that's
won,
the list.
And he's won two Super Bowls, and I'm not keen on him the way he's handled his quarterback on his way out. I think they've done a very poor job of preparing
for the future.
Pittsburgh Steelers for the future.
Interesting segue, Mr. Godbolt.
You know that I don't
would.
Agree with. But you know what they're letting him do? Also, they're letting him go out like a Hall of Famer that he's going to be.
Well,
but,
I mean,
but to sacrifice your program for your quarterback and not have it ready to go when he's going to go out, which is probably this year. I'm pretty sure this is the year to say goodbye to Ben.
Yeah, I mean, that becomes, we saw the New York Giants do it with Eli Manning. I mean, how do you move on from the guy that won you two Super Bowls?
Well, they moved him on.
Yeah.
But this group is letting him do it his way.
Well, and remember, the Giants drafted Daniel Jones with the 6th pick, right? So they drafted his heir apparent.
But Mason Rudolph cannot be the guy.
No. Well, they have not addressed the future. And that's where, you know, there are some wondering if the Steelers would be involved in a Tua situation if Miami is going to trade with Houston for Deshaun Watson, would Pittsburgh or other teams be on the list for Tua Tagovailoa as a quarterback? I don't know, but that story is out there. But you're right, Pittsburgh's got to figure out what they're going to do next after Ben Roethlisberger. The other problem is Ben is, you know, pushing 40 years old now, and they've got a bad offensive line. So
yeah, and he's got to get through this year, which is they don't look that good right now with that line.
Well, so far, I mean, coming in, it is pretty incredible. You know, surprises through 7 weeks of pro football. There are a lot of them, and one of them is that the I thought all offseason it was going to be the AFC that was top heavy as far as where the best teams would be playing, right, with the Chiefs and the Bills, and you know who would be the top team in the East or in the North, I should say. And right now, the best teams in pro football are playing in the NFC, where the Cowboys and the Cardinals and the Rams.
His division is tough enough.
And, you know, AFC, I want to say he's been disappointing, but you know who would be the number one seed in the AFC if the playoffs began today? The Cincinnati Bengals.
Right.
The Cincinnati Bengals at 5-2, and their conference record is the best right now. Now, there's a lot of football to be played, but the Bengals are 5-2. The Bills are 4-2, and they just had a bye week. They feel like the best team, and then, you know, the amazing story is the disappointment of the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, who would have thought as we sit here on the 27th of October that you can name, I can name 12, 13 quarterbacks that are playing better than Patrick Mahomes right now in the pro football, at least.
For sure.
I mean, this guy, Patrick Mahomes, has the league worst 11 turnovers. He's turned the ball over 11 times in 7 games.
Yeah, but I'm not giving up on that dude.
Well, they got to figure it out. He's got to stop turning the football over.
Well, for this year, he's got to do something. But, I mean, for the long run, this is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, sure. I'm not, like, throwing him out with the bathwater here.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that they've got to figure that out.
And as for Tomlin, I just don't understand why he would be so angry at that. I'd be flattered.
Well, I'm pretty sure he didn't hear. I think that came out of left field for him. I mean, I mentioned that Carson Palmer said it on a national radio show. I don't know that he knows that. And so all of a sudden, out of nowhere, people are asking him about.
Why me? You mean the Pittsburgh Steelers not a good job?
Yeah, why am I being asked this? I mean, what am I doing to elicit this? And I don't blame the person who asked him because it's a national radio show.
And you're on their list.
And Carson Palmer named him, so, you know, ask the question.
And you're probably on that list of guys that can handle young men.
Never say never, but never.
Exactly. I don't know what that means.
Which means I'm going to come back at you again and make you say never if I really want you. You're going to have to really say, when I have that blank check in my hand and you want to know how much money we can offer, I'm going to make you say that to me, the guy who's writing the check.
I'm sure
never.
There's a really wealthy booster at USC that heard that and said, wait a second. What do you mean, not a booster never. With a big enough blank check?
Really?
Let me find out, Mike.
Yeah.
Let me show you my blank.
If you want him, that's what you do. You say, okay, I got this blank check. What is never, Mike? What is never for you?
Let me show you my blank check. Okay, so on that NFL front, Deshaun Watson, according to our friend John McClain, who was on the show last Friday and predicted that the Texans would trade Deshaun Watson to the Miami Dolphins by next Tuesday's trade deadline. Here is the latest report from John. He says the compensation in a potential Watson trade between the Dolphins and Texans has been agreed to. So what it's going to take to get the deal done is finalized between the front offices, apparently, according to John.
They sound like they got the assurances from the commissioner that this
is... Well, this is where that's the rub. Now, the owner, Stephen Ross, has even approved the trade, according to John McClain. But he is sticking... The sticking point is he wants Watson's legal issues to be resolved before the trade is executed, which there's only one realistic way that can happen before next Tuesday, and that would be for Deshaun Watson to settle all 22 civil cases that are against him right now, which, by all accounts, he has no intention of doing because, according to his attorney, that would be an admission of guilt, and he's not planning to settle. He wants to, you know, fight for his good name and fight for what he believes is the right side of this thing. So that's not going to happen. So is that the impasse? Meanwhile, Jeffrey Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, also would want assurances from Roger Goodell that he won't be suspended. Roger Goodell was asked yesterday during a press conference at the NFL owners' meetings in New York City about the situation, and he seemed to indicate that the league does not feel like it has the necessary information to place Watson in the commissioner's exempt list.
Until he steps on that field and plays in a game, and then they'll find a reason.
Well, again, the new collective bargain agreement
has to have it, yes.
Goodell does not have the czar, unchecked powers that he had before. The new collective bargaining agreement stripped some of that from the commissioner. There has to be a charge of a felony or some type of crime has to be charged, either a violent crime or a felony has to be charged for Roger Goodell to actually put a player onto the commissioner's exempt list. That has not happened yet, and Goodell indicated yesterday that, you know, the HPD, Houston Police, are investigating this. They've been investigating for months, but they have the information and they don't have access to it. The NFL doesn't have access to what the HPD has found out, and the civil cases are all sealed, so they don't have the information they would need. So at this point, you know, if the trade is consummated, I don't think, according to Roger Goodell, that they would suspend him, but it doesn't mean that can't change if charges then come or more information is uncovered. And at the same time, you know, Jeffrey Ross, the owner, I mean, this thing's going to go down to Tuesday, right? As far as, you know, do we do the deal? Do we make the move? We can put him on the field immediately and take our chances. Houston gets what they're looking for, and John.
Yeah, you can't just get him just to start paying him.
Correct. Well, the Texans are paying him.
Yeah, they are.
They're paying him not to play, which, you know, they're paying him. They want to be able to. I mean, the goal of the Texans all along has been to trade him.
Yeah, and not get him hurt.
And yeah, they don't need him to get injured, so you can then not trade him because he's hurt. So they've, you know, put him in a bubble and are going to plan to hopefully get a trade done for him before Tuesday. And again, this story comes out from John McClain yesterday, which we heard earlier in the week that the Carolina Panthers are now engaged and in interested in this conversation. So that will move forward. Their new owner in Carolina has been very aggressive trying to find a franchise quarterback. to build that organization around. He feels like he has his coach in Matt Rhule. They have a star player in Christian McCaffrey, and they need a quarterback. So they've been in on, the Carolina Panthers have been in on all these quarterback trades, the Matt Stafford deal, some of the others that have went down. He wants to be in on Deshaun Watson, but again, comes with the legal issues that we know all know are there. So according to McClain, that deal is agreed to, but will it get done?
Yeah, I think these teams are understanding that when it comes down to these civil suits, when January and February hit, he's going to be in court getting that done, so he'll get back on the field.
I mean, realistically, I heard Goodell
somebody's
say...
somebody's going to get paid.
You know, realistically, to what Goodell said yesterday, the Dolphins could trade for him, put him on the field and let him play, and then the legal proceedings will play out in a Houston courtroom in February.
Right.
So season will be over. Then you roll the dice. I mean, is this going to be a PR nightmare if you've traded three first-round draft picks and other capital to acquire a guy who turns out to be what he's being alleged to be? You've traded for that.
And now the NFL can do what they want to him.
Yeah, the Texans are sitting there saying, well, we're looking to get out from under this. He doesn't want to be here. We're going to move him. Well, you know, think about the fan base in Miami. If they, you know, give up a lot of capital to go get this guy, and then, you know, who knows what happens come February when the court proceedings
begin.
That's
totally on the owner now. That's not the general manager. That's the owner that makes those decisions.
Oh, yeah. This is an ownership decision.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, my friends.
You do this, that's on you. That's not on us.
All right. Busy Wednesday. More on the Astros. Game one lost to the Braves. Braves get the jump in the World Series. We'll get your B&E fact of the day coming up. Also, as we said, Howard Griffith talks Big Ten football. Chris Beard talks Texas basketball on this, what has turned into a rainy Wednesday morning as the cold front is moving through. Be careful out there. First, though, here's Craig Way.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Wednesday on the Horn, B&E with you. Temperatures dropping. As I said, my drive in this morning, temperatures dropped about 15, 20 degrees in the commute itself. It's down into the low 70s now, and actually low 60s. After the humid, warm evening, the cold front is coming through and bringing some showers. Be careful out there as you get up and out. We got our B&E fact of the day before the top of the hour. Reset those headlines. Hear from Steve Sarkisian coming up in our Coach's Corner as Texas prepares for Baylor on Saturday. All right, Buck, here it is. List of 10 quarterbacks playing better than Patrick Mahomes right now in the National Football League. Tom Brady, is he playing the best right now of all the QBs? He's got 21 touchdowns, just three picks.
There's no doubt.
How about that? Yeah, Tom Brady doing
his
thing.
And Dak, of course.
600 touchdowns. Now, Kyler Murray, who we're going to see tomorrow night, he's playing better than Patrick Mahomes. The preseason, remember, Mahomes was the preseason favorite in Vegas to be the MVP of this league, and he's getting outplayed by a bunch of dudes. Also, Matthew Stafford is playing to an MVP level right now. 19 touchdowns, 4 picks. Dak Prescott, coming off a bye week, playing at an elite level. 73% completion percentage now for Dak. He's as accurate as we've ever seen him, Buck.
For sure.
Just throwing dimes all over the field. I know he's got weapons.
I would say Aaron Rodgers would be in there, too.
Lamar Jackson, for sure. Josh Allen.
Yep.
Justin Herbert. Derek Carr. Derek Carr is playing better than Patrick Mahomes. Aaron Rodgers and Joe Burrow playing better than... I mean, Joe Burrow has got the Cincinnati Bengals sitting at 5-2. He's got 17 touchdowns this year. And the number that just sticks out like a sore thumb for Mahomes is...
interceptions.
He's got 11 turnovers. He's got 9 picks. He's fumbled the ball twice.
Yep.
And you just can't win football games. The Chiefs are 3-4. And, you know, Mahomes...
And what's worse is they have a bad defense, too.
That's why I say they remind me of the Cowboys last year before Dak got hurt. They were... The defense is bad, but the offense keeps killing them. Remember last year when Zeke kept fumbling and Dak was turning the ball over? It was just a bad mix. And that's
this group on defense doesn't get the ball back for me either.
And now we talked going into the season that the Chiefs had a real tough early schedule, and they have, right? They've played a lot of good teams early, but they're 3-4 now. And, you know, can they get that fixed? You trust Andy Reid. They've got good players. That offensive line that we talked about all offseason in Kansas City, it's all new guys trying to come together, some rookies in that mix
Hard to score in bunches if you're turning the ball over.
Oh, yeah. And you just can't give away possessions in the National Football League. It's such an offensive league these days. You're running into good teams. And then, gosh, the game against Tennessee, every time you give the ball back to Derrick Henry, now he starts pounding on your defense again.
Right.
Just wear you down. So NFL opens tomorrow night with a good one, Arizona and the Green Bay Packers. 6-1 against 7-0, but the Packers will be without now their defensive coordinator, You see who's going to be calling the defensive side of the ball for the Packers tomorrow night with the defense coordinator out with COVID?
The linebacker himself?
Jerry Gray.
Jerry
the
is.
Former Longhorn, Jerry Gray, who's on that staff in Green Bay. He'll be the defensive coordinator, essentially. Also, though, for the Packers, more importantly, the loss of, at least at this point, to Devontae Adams, the wide receiver to COVID protocols. Also, Alan Lazard, another one of the top targets.
Wow.
For Aaron Rodgers. They're going to go in there.
With their tight ends, that's it?
Kind of handcuffed. I mean, they'll have Valdez-Scandling. They'll have Randall Cobb.
And they'll use their back out of the backfield, too.
They'll use Aaron Jones.
Yep.
He'll probably get a heavy workload. But that Cardinals defense, you know, the Cardinals, you think offense and Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and all that they do, they're 7-0 because their defense has been great.
Mm-hmm.
They got some dudes, including former Texan J.J. Watt on that defensive side of the ball. They're wreaking havoc on people. So you're Aaron Rodgers. You go into Arizona. It's going to be a loud environment in the desert, and you're dealing with, you know, a really good football team without, you know, Devontae Adams.
And I still believe their Green Bay's defense is still kind of suspect. So,
yeah.
I think they'll run at them.
They're going to have to step up and play some better D. Because, I mean, they beat the Washington football team last week, the Packers, 24-10. But if you saw that game, the Washington blew a couple of opportunities at the goal line.
They did.
I mean, they had a chance to make that a one-score game on a couple of occasions and make it. But they two chances to score 14 points essentially didn't happen. They end up losing by 14, turned into the ball game. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know that as we talk about these top teams, where does Green Bay rank in there along with the Rams and the Cardinals and the, you know, Buccaneers and the Cowboys? We'll see. We'll get a good look at that coming up tomorrow night.
Well, it doesn't matter if Adams doesn't play. That's good. That would be a problem no matter who they were. You know, who else? It wouldn't matter. If that guy's out, that's his go-to guy.
And it's one of the most unstoppable combinations
right.
in pro football. Aaron Rodgers with that, you know, pinpoint accuracy, putting it where only Devontae Adams can catch it. Those two just are fun to watch. We won't get to see that tomorrow night. That's unfortunate for sure as we get you going. We'll reset that World Series game, too. I saw Isaiah Collier with a tweet last night. Zay had a tweet about the Lakers-Spurs game, the drama, what was going on down in San Antonio, Zay. The Lakers and Spurs into overtime last night. Good ball game early.
Yeah, it was a good game. Anthony Davis, every time he falls, you think that's his ACL, MCL.
When's he going to get hurt?
Something. Yeah, every
Is
time
going
he falls.
Soccer?
Yes, he fell so hard. I knew Laker fans thought that was it. I knew they did. And he just sprung back up and ended up winning the game.
Maybe you need some rest.
And so were Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook scored or assisted on 91 of the Lakers' 125 points last night. That's why they got Westbrook, right? When one of the big two goes down, they still have a guy that can score the basketball. May not be a good fit come playoff time, but Westbrook gives them another scorer for sure. Can we get your B&E fact of the day before the top of the hour?
B&E Fact of the Day brought to you by Texas Orthopedics. Texas owned and operated for over 30 years, providing comprehensive orthopedic care for your whole family. TXOrtho.com.
Astros dropped game one of the Fall Classic last night. Astros now 0-4 all time in World Series game ones. 0-4. There's only one franchise with a worse record in World Series game ones. Could you guess it? Houston 0-4 now in game ones. Probably should have picked the Braves last night. Would have been a good bet out in Vegas on BetUS, Buck. But
for sure.
There's one organization that's even worse historically in game ones of the Fall Classic. We'll have the answer for you on the other side. It's B&E on a Wednesday.